What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Sean Jones NBA Show. I'm recording this on Monday, September 30th. I know it has been quite a while since I've hopped on the podcast, and a lot of that is just due to the fact that, you know, there wasn't a lot going on over the last couple months, and I've been doing my preseason prep. But we did have a major move go down over this past weekend on Friday night between the Minnesota Timberwolves and the New York Knicks. So obviously had to come on and give my instant reaction to that. So going to be talking through the deal from the side of Minnesota as well as New York and talk through all the players involved, what it means for the East and the West from a contention standpoint, and all things surrounding this deal. So with that said, let's get right into it. So in this deal, we had Karl Anthony Towns, who had been thrown around in rumors for quite a bit of time now, but though it really always only felt like rumors and never really felt like they were that close to actually dealing him. But they finally did, Minnesota, to the New York Knicks in exchange for Julius Randle, whose name had also been in rumors quite a bit over the last year or so, as well as Dante DiVincenzo, who signed with New York last offseason. And in addition, the Wolves acquire a first-round pick via the Pistons from the Knicks. But I do just want to call out that this is not a real first-round pick. It is one of those picks that is top lottery protected, then the next year it's top 10 protected, then next year it turns into second-round pick. So unless you think the Pistons are making some great rise into playoff contention, then I think it's pretty safe to say that this is eventually going to turn into second-round picks, not a first-round pick. But because of these two teams both being in the apron, Minnesota's in the second apron and New York's in the first apron as of now, neither team can take back more salary than they are sending out. And the math on Randle plus DiVincenzo for Towns doesn't work straight up. So the deal is still being finalized. The rumors have been saying that the Hornets appear to be the third team in play here. Basically, I think that New York is going to be sending multiple players to Charlotte. Don't know exactly who those players are. They've got a lot of guys on smaller deals. They just cut Marcus Morris and Chume Okiki. Daquan Jeffries was rumored to be part of the deal. They've got Kata Bates Diops, who could be involved as well. But regardless of who it is, it's not going to be anybody major from the rotation, it doesn't seem like. And Charlotte's going to be incentivized with some picks just to help get this deal across the finish line as well. So I want to start out with the New York side of this deal. And I know there has been quite a bit of mixed feelings about this deal for the Knicks, even from Knicks fans themselves. A lot of that may be more nostalgic than actual on-court product. But regardless, I really like this deal for the Knicks. I think this is a huge win for them. When I first saw the deal, my instant reaction was just that this is exactly what the Knicks needed if they want to get to where they want to go. And for no other reason than the fact that they literally did not have a center on the team right now that is a viable rotation player. Like, I actually don't think this was being talked about enough. There's all this discourse around the Sixers and the Bucks and how, yeah, they're talented, but come playoff time, like, are they going to be healthy? You never know with Embiid and Paul George and Dame and Giannis and all these guys. But the Knicks had a bigger hole than either of those teams or any of the teams at the top of the Eastern Conference. The league is headed towards bigger players, and every good contending team needs a big. Just go down the list of contenders and beat on the Sixers. The Bucks have Giannis and Brooke Lopez. The Nuggets with Jokic, the Celtics with Porzingis, the Lively and Gafford combo in Dallas, the Chet and Hartenstein combo in OKC now, and then Gobert in Minnesota, and what was previously Cap, but now still Gobert. Like, all of the top teams have an extremely viable center option, whether it be a really elite combo like a Lively and Gafford or a Chet and a Hartenstein, or just an all-star caliber player like Embiid or Jokic or Giannis or something along those lines. And so Mitchell Robinson was reportedly going to be out till at least December. Some said January, but given this guy's injury history, I have no reason to believe why it wouldn't be till January, if not further. I mean, the guy is a walking injury waiting to happen. He played only 31 games last year, 59 the year before, and then 2 years before that, only 31. I mean, he's only made it to 60 games once in the past four seasons, and he got injured in last year's postseason, was injured in the postseason before that as well. Like, the guy has not proven that he can stay on the court. So even when he was supposedly healthy, I was still wildly concerned for them in the Eastern Conference as a contender, because it was not a matter of if he got hurt, but when he got hurt. And he already did, and he's going to be out for months. And so they were going to be relying on either Jericho Sims, Precious Achiuwa, or they were going to have to go small ball. Sims is not a legitimate NBA rotation player. Achiuwa is maybe, but he's more of a, at best, ninth or tenth man. He's not a viable starter if you're considering yourself a real contender. And then Randall and OG, certainly they can do some small ball, but Anunoby is also wildly injury prone, and playing him big minutes at the five over the span of an entire season, or even half a season, it's not going to help him in terms of his durability. And so I just don't trust that as an option for a full season. And then Randall, he's already hurt. There's already reports that they're not sure he's going to be ready for the start of the season anyway. So that didn't feel like a viable solution either. And so they needed to add somebody. There were rumors of smaller moves like Nick Richards, but I respect them for going out and saying, let's just go get the best center we can get right now. He's not only a huge upgrade from anything they had before, but he's legitimately a top 3 to 4 offensive center in the league. I mean, after Jokic and Embiid, if you want to call Anthony Davis a center, then he's in that conversation with like the Sabonises of the world, right? The next person on that list. So I think solving that problem alone makes this a huge, huge win. If you have to lose Randall and DiVincenzo in the process, I think that's fine. I think Randall's skill set obviously is redundant with what Kat does to an extent as just a scoring bigger player. And then DiVincenzo's shooting, again, Kat can make up for a lot of that. But aside from just positionally this making more sense for New York, I think just in their offense, Towns is a significantly better fit than Julius Randle was. He thrives as a off-the-ball player, a catch-and-shoot guy. He doesn't demand touches in like an isolation setting or anything like that. And meanwhile, Randle, his whole game is built around that. He, like, when he's at his best, he's a dump it down to him on the block, couple jab steps, going to take 4, 5, 6 dribbles before he really gets into his move. And look, there's a place for that on teams in the NBA, but I think this version of the Knicks was kind of over that. They didn't need that out of Randall anymore. They have enough talent now where between Brunson, Bridges, the development of what they had in DiVincenzo, Anunoby, now adding Towns, like those are all upgrade options in terms of just getting good looks in the offense from what they were getting out of Randall. And I'm not trying to take anything away from Randall. He was spectacular for New York. He made multiple All-NBA teams, something that I never thought he'd be capable. And even when he did it once, I was very skeptical he'd be able to follow it up. But he proved to be a really, really high-level player, a legitimate top 40, top 50 player in the NBA. But they just didn't really need his skill set anymore because of the emergence of Brunson and the other talented players they had added on the wing. And Randall is kind of one of those weird players that I like to classify them as guys that are actually better as first options than they are as second options. But the problem is when they're your first option, you're never going to be good enough. Maybe the poster boy of this is Russell Westbrook, prime Westbrook. Like when he's just unleashed doing his thing, that's when he's actually at his best. That's when you're maximizing what you're getting out of him. But the reality is that if he's your first option, unfortunately, you're just never going to be good enough. And so that's how I feel with Randall too. And then when Russ gets pushed into a second or third option, he becomes a worse version of himself because he's not a good shooter. He is just not a good off-ball player in general. He takes sporadic shots when he shouldn't. And Randall did a little of the same of that. He's sort of a bigger version of what Russ, or like a D'Angelo Russell is another good example of this as well. And so now they replace Randall with a player who's extremely good as being a secondary or tertiary offensive option, and a much better floor spacer too. I mean, say what you want about Randall, his shooting is certainly improved, but again, He's still, for his career, 33% from three. He was only 31% last year, 34 the year before, 31 the year before that. He had one good year where he shot 41%. Outside of that, he's never hit 35% in his entire career from three. Meanwhile, Karl Anthony Towns is a perennial 40% three-point shooter. As I mentioned, like one of the absolute best shooting bigs in the whole league, maybe of all time, if you're looking at just centers and seven-footers in terms of their shooting. So much better floor spacer. He should be able to make up for a lot of what they're losing in DiVincenzo as a shooter. And then also, ultimately, this Knicks team is going all in, and they want to contend for a championship. But Randle had been, no exaggeration, maybe the worst all-time high-volume offensive performer in NBA history. That's not an exaggeration. Since the merger, for all players to average 15 or more field goal attempts in the playoff per game, Randle has the lowest dead last field goal percentage in the entire NBA history since the merger. And then for all players to average at least 6 3-point attempts in the playoffs, Randle's also dead last in 3-point percentage in the playoffs. And he also has more turnovers than assists in the playoffs. So, I mean, in terms of high volume since the merger, all the numbers bear him out as quite literally the worst high volume postseason performer we've ever seen. And Karl Anthony Towns, I mean, don't get me wrong, he's a flawed player and he's not perfect and he's had some low lows in the playoffs and his numbers are even down a little bit from what they've been in the regular season. But he still is shot way better than Randle has. He's averaged 19 and 10, 47% from the field, 35% from three. Again, a little lower than he had in the regular season, but he's still a floor spacer. He's still a threat. Teams are going to have to guard him out there. With Randle, they'll let him shoot all day. They know that he wants to operate more in the mid-range or closer to the basket, whereas with Towns, defenders have to be a magnet on him out there because he's just such a threat to score from out there. But he's been a better player performer than Randle, and I think in this role, what they need out of a player in that spot, Kat is just such a better fit. I also think it gives them much more lineup flexibility because they can play Towns at the five. I mean, that's where he played the majority of his career. That's what he came into the league playing. He's clearly capable. But the proof of concept of Towns next to another center also clearly was a success with Gobert. Again, say what you want about Gobert and the Wolves over the past few years, but that was a successful formula for them playing those two twin towers, if you will, next to each other. And so now there's no pressure on Robinson to come back quickly because they have Towns and they can get by with Sims and Chua as backups. But when Robinson is back, they still can go jumbo lineup and put Towns at the four and Ananobi at the three and Bridges at the two with Brunson running the show point guard and Robinson at the five. And then you've got a just scary defensive lineup. Towns doesn't have the pressure to be the rim protector all the time because they have that optionality. But also, if they want to go more offensive-centric, put Josh Hart in there instead, or McBride if he breaks out a little bit more this season. And then you've just got a very scary defensive lineup you can throw out or a very scary offensive lineup that you can throw out. And so I don't really get – I feel like I've seen a lot of negativity surrounding this for the Knicks. And I think a lot of it, like I mentioned, is kind of nostalgic. I think people really loved the Knicks the past few years and the feel-good story of kind of underdog vibes and these guys who are all just like good friends and they don't necessarily like – they didn't have the expectations of actually like winning. So even just making the second round in a game seven last year with how injured they were especially just felt like a win for the team across the board. And I've also seen a lot of people saying that they kind of wanted – to see what the team looked like with Randle coming back and adding Bridges and just kind of running it back with what they had. And then maybe trade Randle down the line if you need to. But I don't really agree with that because I think people are just overstating what the Knicks would have been before this deal. To me, they were still a clear-cut fourth in the East after Boston, Milwaukee, and Philadelphia. I thought they had the least amount of star power. I thought they had the biggest weakness of any of the teams with that hole at center. I think all the other teams have some weaknesses, but nothing as glaring as the center spot was going to be for New York after losing Hartenstein and with Robinson being out until probably next year. And now I think with this move, they're fully in the conversation for second. I think you have to put Boston first. But to me, there's totally fair argument to be made for them in the same conversation as the Sixers or the Bucks in terms of making a run to the conference finals or even the finals or even winning the whole thing. And I think people are just forgetting how good Towns can be. He's a four-time All-Star. He's made the All-NBA twice now. He's maybe the best shooting big in the history of the NBA. He's a much improved passer. He has shown such a willingness to sacrifice in recent years with Ant emerging and with Gobert coming in at center. He has been asked to play a different position. He's been asked to knock down one slot in the offensive pecking order, and he's taken it all in stride. And he's agreed to all of these things just for the betterment of the team. And so I think that all of these things just bode really well for him coming into what is kind of a stacked lineup for the Knicks. But I also think with as good as Mikal and Anunoby are, like, those two guys are not going to, they're not going to demand a ton of touches either. So you've got Brunson who can run the show, three guys who can be really good offensive players, but don't necessarily need the touches. They're not going to complain if they get eight shots in a game and only score 12 points if they win, you know what I mean? So, and I get the concerns. They don't have the flexibility moving forward, obviously. That's probably the biggest one, but I would argue they didn't really have a lot of it anyway. They were headed to be an apron team. They had basically traded every possible first-round pick that they had. As I mentioned, this Pistons one wasn't even a real first-round pick anyway. They weren't going to have cap space anytime soon. They were going to have to pay bridges coming up. And even if Randall walked, they still were not going to have like the ability to replace him or with a player even remotely close to what they could get. So Towns, to me, felt like the best player that they could get for this spot with the assets that they had. So to me, I'm not really worried about the flexibility thing. I think it's overstated the flexibility they would have had even if they didn't make this deal. But it is what it is there. And I get the Towns and the Tibbs history. The reports are not phenomenal with those two of what you hear people say about when he last played for him. But, you know, I think Cat has come a long way since then. It's been, 4 or 5 years since he last played for Thibodeau. And I think that Towns is a more mature player. He's coming up on his age 29 season. And I think he's just not the same guy he was 5 years ago. I think he is more willing to accept smaller roles. He's willing to do the little things a little bit more. And overall, I just think he's a more mature player. And so I'm not saying that they're going to be a match made in heaven, but I think it's going to be a lot more doable than what it may have been in the past. And I think the overall culture with that Wolves team when Tibbs came in back then wasn't great anyway, with the Wiggins and D'Angelo Russell like teams of the past. Like, that's just not exactly the same sort of overall fit that you'd want from a culture perspective than what the Knicks have going here, which has clearly been very good over the last few years. I'm not going to understate the DiVincenzo loss. Obviously, that is significant. He was really good for them last year. He was phenomenal in the postseason for them, shot the ball really well, was relied on to be a secondary scoring option after Brunson, averaged 17, 18 points a game in the postseason. But again, I mean, DiVincenzo's not exactly a lockdown defender. He's fine there. So what did he bring? He brought floor spacing, shooting, and secondary scoring. But those are all things that Cat does not only really well, but probably better than DiVincenzo even. And so I'm not really worried about that. I think they definitely are a little thinner at the wing spot and just thinner overall, it feels like now. So, of course, the more bodies you can have, the better. But I'm not going to sit here and act like, oh my God, DiVincenzo is some... I mean, this is what, the fourth, fifth team he's been on in like 6 or 7 years in the league at this point. So it's not exactly like he's some all-star or even going to be a fringe all-star player at any point. He's a good role player. But he was a piece they could afford to lose to upgrade the rest of the roster. And then lastly, I know Towns is a defensive downgrade at the five, but I mentioned they can play him and Robinson. I don't think it's going to be an issue because, one, they can play him at the four in closing lineups if they really want to, with Mitchell Robinson playing the five, who was going to be in the lineup anyway in most of their closing lineups beforehand. So just putting Cat in the Randall spot at the four, still an upgrade to me in terms of both ends of the court. And secondly, you really couldn't ask for a better defensive infrastructure on the wing position than what the Knicks have with Bridges and Anunoby and Josh Hart. Like, I know that he also had a really nice infrastructure in Minnesota with Ant and McDaniels. But I mean, I still think it's an upgrade in terms of defensive wing and just perimeter defense that the Knicks have. So I think that they've got so many good surrounding pieces to help him succeed defensively, even though he's not exactly a great defensive player. He's definitely not much of a rim protector, and he can struggle on the perimeter a little bit as well. But we saw that in Minnesota, they were able to mask a lot of his weaknesses with other personnel around him. And I think New York's got the same capabilities. I think there's obviously Mitchell Robinson's not quite the defender that Gobert is, but I mean, in terms of rim protection, he's one of the best shot blocking bigs that we have in the league. And so I think he's going to do a lot of the same things that Gobert can do. And I think that Ananobi and Bridges are going to do a really good job of funneling the drivers and ball handlers to advantageous spots to make Towns just not have to be a liability on that end of the court. So overall, I thought the Knicks needed to add more star power and firepower. They did exactly that in this deal. I thought the Randall fit was always going to be a little bit of a question, and I think they addressed that by putting Towns in there, who's a much better fit, not only from a skill set perspective, but I also think from just an ego perspective. Randall had kind of been the man in New York, and now he wasn't the man, and so that can always be tough for players, whereas Towns kind of is just coming in, and he's going to figure out how to fit in, and that's really going to be more of his job. And then lastly, they absolutely, desperately needed to replace or just find somebody to be a center for this team while Mitchell Robinson was out. I do not think they would have been very well off just going by a by committee approach with what they had until Robinson got back, because one, that's a long time to have to do that. And two, I also don't think that I don't trust Mitch Robinson to stay healthy even when he comes back. I just haven't seen him be reliable enough to be the starting center on a legitimate contending team, because he hasn't even made it through a playoff successfully in the past few years. So I think they addressed really the three biggest question marks I had about this team. Of course, this opens up a few more question marks, as I mentioned, but I'd much rather be in the situation they're in now than what they were in before. I think Towns just checks so many boxes for them, and I think they legitimately have a chance to make the finals now. I was very skeptical of it before, and I think this is a move that puts them in prime position to contend for that. I think they've got as good a chance as anybody in the East, except maybe Boston. But again, repeating is really hard in the NBA, so if you told me Boston or the field, I might take the field. And so at that point, the Knicks are right there in play with anybody else in the Eastern Conference in terms of contending and maybe even going on to compete for a championship in the finals. So on the Minnesota side of things, I don't really love this deal for them, I'm not going to lie. To me, it screams just a money move. Like they want to get under the second apron, or they just want some more flexibility after this year. But to me, they're a worse team than they were beforehand. And they made some really, really great progress last year. The 2 years before that, they had lost first round and what were largely somewhat competitive series, but never were they really big threats to actually win those series. And then this year in the postseason, they sweep a team with Devin Booker and Kevin Durant on their roster. Then they knock off the defending champion Nuggets with Nikola Jokic on the roster. And they fall short in the conference finals. But what do you expect? And it was only 22, and it was their first time getting out of the first round. So this was like linear progression for them. It made sense, and it felt like the perfect time to just run it back. Add some small pieces around the edges, which they did with Rob Dillingham out of the draft and then Joe Ingles. And they largely brought all their other big contributors back from last season. Monty Morris, really the only fringe rotation guy that won't be back from last year. But again, Dillingham's a more upside play than him regardless. So it felt to me like they should have given this one more year. It wasn't some disastrous exit, disastrous finish. I think if they had lost first round again last year, then it makes sense. Then maybe you look in the mirror and say, Gobert and Towns just aren't a good fit, and we need to switch something up. But that was I think they exceeded everybody's expectations. Nobody really had them as a top three seed going into last year. Nobody really thought they were going to make the conference finals. Phoenix was actually favored in Vegas first round against them. So To me, it was a really successful year for them. There was nothing to be ashamed of. Their best player still only entering his age 23 season. Like, to me, you just got to run this back. But maybe they were worried that another failed season would kill Towns's trade value, similarly to what we've seen with Brandon Ingram or Zach LaVine. But I don't know. I don't think it would have gotten to that point personally. But regardless, here we are. And I really do not like the Anthony Edwards, Julius Randle fit. As phenomenal as Anthony Edwards is, he is still a little bit of a ball stopper. I think his biggest weakness is that he can be a little black hole-y at times. But he's still so good, obviously. And so it's okay. But pairing him with a guy in Randle who's like the ultimate ball stopper, the ultimate black hole guy, again, still a good player. But surviving with two of those types of players on your team becomes increasingly difficult, especially when you're going from a guy in Towns who was anything but that, an off-ball player, a pick-and-pop guy, a catch-and-shoot guy. Like, he doesn't demand touches, and Randle is like the antithesis of that. He needs touches. He needs the ball in the block. He's going to take a couple extra dribbles. He's going to do a jab step before he gets into his move. Like, he doesn't make quick decisions on the court, which is fine. But when you've got two guys who want to play in that similar style, it could be tough to compete offensively, because this team already wasn't great offensively last year. They were only 16th in the league on offense. And we saw that come right to the forefront in the conference finals, where they really struggled offensively. And a lot of that was because Towns didn't make shots. And so if Randle doesn't make shots, I don't see any scenario why they wouldn't just be in the same spot they were in last year in the playoffs, where they're just struggling offensively. And so now they've got two black hole type players. They have much worse spacing than they used to, which already was a little bit of a concern for them. I know DiVincenzo will help with that, but in order to play him in like crunch time, you're either going to have to sit Conley, sit McDaniels, or sit Randle. I mean, those are really the options, because there's only so many spots in this lineup. And I wouldn't want to sit McDaniels, because he's their best perimeter defensive player and is still getting better on the offensive end. I wouldn't want to sit Conley, because he's maybe the only guy on the team that actually knows how to get everybody into their sets and make sure guys are getting the ball in their spots. And then, again, you can bench Randle, but then why make this move if it's for a guy who might not even be in closing lineups? The alternative there is to play Randle at, like, the five, and then bench Gobert. But again, that's a guy you're paying $40 million a year. So there's really no like ideal scenario in terms of like who's sitting to get DiVincenzo in some of these closing lineups. And I'm sure he will be in some of them. But again, he's not going to start for this team most likely. And so the impact he can have is more marginal around the edges. And they're not gaining any shooting that they didn't just lose with Towns anyway. Aside from just the general fit, we talked a lot about how they were designed to beat Denver. Well, that whole concept is out the window now, because their whole strategy was to put Towns on Jokic to guard straight up, so he's got size on him, and then let Gobert be like a roamer near the basket. But now Gobert's just going to have to guard him. I mean, you're not going to put Randle or Naz Reid on Jokic full time, I wouldn't think. And even if you do, then it's still just, they're not quite as big as Towns. And Towns did a pretty good job on him straight up, if we're being totally honest. And we've seen Gobert try to guard Jokic in the past, and it just hasn't been successful. I mean, they've fallen short every single time when they've had to do that. And so they're no longer this juggernaut designed to beat Denver. They might be a little bit more well-equipped, or at least capable of beating like a Dallas or an OKC in some capacity, but they're still going to have to play them. And if they want to get to where they want to be in like the NBA finals, they're going to have to beat Denver again, most likely, unless somebody else knocks them out. But then if someone beats them, then they're going to have another really good team they're going to have to beat regardless. So this also puts them in a vulnerable position in terms of just retaining their talent. Like, I get it. They want to be more flexible. They got off of Towns. He had a huge contract. He was due for $49 million this upcoming season, then $53 million the year after that, then $57 million the year after that, and then $61 million in 2028. So I get, to an extent, wanting to get off that deal. But again, you replace it with Randle, he's a free agent at the end of this season. I mean, we'll see, but I find it unlikely that he's going to sign an extension before the season. They're probably going to want to see how it looks. So he's probably in all likelihood headed to free agency. And so you might lose him for nothing at the end of this year. And then this will turn into a straight salary dump. And that would all it would be. If he walks and then suddenly it's just you got DiVincenzo for Towns, like to me, that's a huge asset mismanagement situation right there. Like you have a guy in Anthony Edwards who's 23, going to be in his prime over the next 3 to 4 seasons. And like to shed salary with his best player after he just showed that they were really close to making a finals last year, it's a disservice to him. It's a disservice to a franchise that has not had a lot of success. They just had their best season probably ever for the team. Like legitimately, you could say 2004 when Garnett took them to the conference finals, but this team was better than that team. They had Garnett, and then it was not a lot of other great players on that roster. So they arguably had the best team they've ever had in franchise history, and you just tear it down immediately for what could end up just being a salary dump is just really not a good look. And if I'm Anthony Edwards and that's how it plays out, I'm not going to be happy is the point. And so they don't have the cap space to replace him if he walks, Randall, I mean. And so they're really just gambling on Naz Reid then turning into a high-level player, which Naz Reid, very good player, deserving of Sixth Man of the Year last year, had some really big moments for them in the postseason, even looked better out there than the lineups with Towns at times. Not consistently, but at times. But you move into the lineup, then your huge advantage of the bench is no longer a huge advantage because he's not on the bench anymore. And again, he's 24, 25-ish. Like, I don't think he's going to get so much better that he's ever going to match the production of a Towns or a Randall. So again, it just feels risky to me to dump your best player when you've got a budding superstar, borderline top 10 player already on the team, and downgrading the roster when you just had your best season in franchise history. And so maybe they're thinking, okay, so we got off Kat's deal. Gobert only has 2 years left. So maybe they when Ant is in his age 25-ish season, they'll have a ton of cap space theoretically. And so maybe that's what they're pitching to Ant. They're saying, hey, when you're just hitting your prime, we're going to have a ton of flexibility to add other players. We can sign guys. We can trade for guys. But they better follow up on that is all I'm saying, because they still owe a lot of draft picks out, and so they're not going to have all the ammo that they might need in order to make a big acquisition via trade. And so maybe they need to sign guys, but I'm a little skeptical because we've never seen a big free agent go to Minnesota. They're just not the pull that a lot of these bigger market teams are, and maybe Anthony Edwards is big enough of a pull in himself, but we will see. I am skeptical of that. And so overall, to me, this is a clear knockdown for Minnesota. I had them as a top 3, maybe top 2 contender in the West. I think OKC is the favorite to me right now. I think Denver is still very much in play just because of Jokic. So I had them neck and neck with Denver for the number 2 spot in the West right now. And to me, this puts them well below Denver. I think that there's an argument to be made for Dallas being ahead of them now. I think that there's an argument to be made that they might even fall down closer to that Phoenix and Memphis tier. And just in terms of like actual contention, because the playoffs obviously is the goal for this team. And I think losing Kat in place of Randall is going to make them a worse team in the playoffs. I think they'll be worse in the regular season a little bit, but I think if Ant ascends more and like Dillingham breaks out, like they've got depth and good pieces to still put together a really good 50-plus win season. But in the postseason, I view them as a lesser team than I did before this deal. And again, they still will have a really good defensive team. They still, like Randall still is a very good player, but how he fits into the team is an unknown. And with Towns, you knew exactly how he fit into the team. Both Randall, we don't know. He might mesh really well. He might be a disaster. It's just we're going to have to see. But I just think come playoff time, their offense could get really, really bleak, similarly to how it did in the conference finals this past year and how it did in stretches during the regular season. I mean, again, like I said, this team struggled offensively at times, and I just think taking out the shooting of Towns, taking out the floor spacing of Towns, taking out the off ball ability to thrive off ball of Towns and replacing it with Randle, who needs touches, who needs dribbles, who needs shots in isolation. It just isn't a formula that I think is going to improve this team. And so, again, it screams a money move to me. And that's just not what you want to see coming off the best season in franchise history with a superstar at only 23 years old on the roster. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Sean Jones NBA Show. Thank you so much for listening. I'm going to have a lot of content coming up over the next month or so. I'm going to do my top 100 players list will drop on the blog portion of my website over the next month before the season starts. I also will do my annual contender tiers as sort of a preseason preview. I'll probably do that on my podcast as well as in article form, but we'll see. Still working through that. But obviously, I'll do season preview, playoff predictions, hot takes for the year. I'll tell you who I think is going to represent each team in the finals, who's going to win it all, who's going to be better than people think, worse than people think. I'm going to touch on all that coming up over the next month, and I'm going to get really back into dropping more regular episodes as the season starts and the lead up to it as well. But I'm super pumped. It is a lot closer than you might think. But with that said, thanks for listening, and I will chat with you soon.